leader in you. How to win friends, influence people, and succeed in a changing world. By Dale Carnegie and Associates, Inc. Stuart R. Levine, Chief Executive Officer for Dale Carnegie and Associates, Inc. And Michael A. Crom, Vice President of Dale Carnegie Centers of Excellence. With an introduction by Stuart R. Levine.
It's a tough world out there, and you can't count on things getting any easier. What you can do is invest in yourself and develop your own leadership abilities that will help you achieve greater personal and professional success. Today's environment is more chaotic and challenging than ever before. Technology is booming, and consumers are more sophisticated. But technology alone is never enough. Success in the future will still be determined by those people and companies that can establish quality human relationships. Success in the future will be determined by leadership. The ability to communicate and motivate people will determine who wins and loses in the next decade. The Leader in You was written to explain the importance of leadership and how each one of us can develop a vision, communicate it, and empower others to share in it. In interviews with over 100 of this century's most important voices, from Malcolm S. Forbes, Jr. to Arthur Ashe, you will hear real-life examples of how Dale Carnegie's time-tested human relations principles can impact your life. Dale Carnegie has been training people to become leaders for over 80 years. Today, there are over 3.5 million people in over 70 countries who have participated in our training. The need for communication and teamwork is more important today than ever before. Whether you are a CEO of a Fortune 500 company, a volunteer in a nonprofit organization, or trying to successfully lead a family, this audio tape will help you harness your creativity and enthusiasm to work and live more productively. You will learn how to build trusting relationships, listen more effectively, control your worries, and earn respect of the people in your life. It is our hope that you will become a better leader. The groups you are in will become more productive teams, and the companies you are associated with will become great ones.
As the 21st century approaches, the world is undergoing enormous change, a process of great upheaval and great possibility. With the end of the Cold War, the business environment has grown dramatically more intense. Competition has become more global. Corporate pyramids are tumbling down, and technology races on. To survive in the years to come, successful organizations will have to undergo a profound cultural change. Their people will have to think quicker, work smarter, dream wilder, and relate to each other in very different ways. The day has long since passed when a company could be run with a bullwhip and a chair. The leaders of tomorrow will have to establish a real vision and a sense of values. These leaders will have to communicate and motivate far more effectively through conditions of near constant change. And these leaders will have to mine every ounce of talent and creativity from the shop floor to the executive suite. Technological sophistication will be important as the world races ahead. Malcolm S. Forbes, Jr., editor-in-chief of the business magazine that bears his family's name, explains, "The microchip is extending the reach of the human brain the way machines extended the reach of the human muscle in the last century. Today, software is becoming the slabs of steel. Fiber optics and digital screens are becoming the railroads and the highways for transportation. And so information is raw material. But technology alone is never enough in difficult times. Just because the means of communication are readily available doesn't mean that people have learned to communicate well. Far too often today, they haven't. This is one of the ironies of modern times, the great capacity to communicate, the great failure to do so. What good is all this information if people don't know how to share it? Technological sophistication is just the price of admission to the new business arena. In the end, the winners and losers will be those organizations with smart and creative leaders who know how to communicate and motivate effectively inside the organization and out. No one ever said these skills would come naturally, and frequently they do not. Not long ago, the Graduate School of Business at Harvard University conducted a survey of its students, alumni, and recruiters. "What we are finding," says Harvard Business School professor John A. Quelch, "is a large measure of satisfaction with the technical competence of graduating students. These bright young people can crunch numbers, analyze markets, and devise business plans, but when it comes to teaching human relations skills, Harvard is stepping up its efforts. That seems to be the area where improvements are needed," Quelch observes. "Oral and written communication, teamwork, and other human skills." Burt Manning, chairman of J. Walter Thompson Company, the worldwide advertising firm, says, "It isn't that easy to know how to provide superior human relationships. There are a few people who do it instinctively, but most people have to be educated. They have to be trained. It takes as much training and as much sophistication as it does to be an engineer in a car company and to design a better piston. Those companies that can create a cadre of human beings who act in a way that advance the company's cause are going to beat the other guy," Manning says. "Those are the companies that understand that service and human relationships are going to be a huge differentiator in success." Dale Carnegie, the visionary leader who in 1936 wrote one of the best-selling books in the history of the written word, How to Win Friends and Influence People, never witnessed the arrival of this new human relations revolution. But long before anyone had ever heard the terms employee empowerment or quality improvement process, Carnegie was pioneering some fundamental human relations concepts that lay at the center of those important ideas. Carnegie formed a company which today custom designs training programs for more than 400 of the Fortune 500 firms. With each new generation, the Carnegie message has shown an uncanny ability to redefine itself to meet the needs of a changing world. Communicating effectively with other people, motivating them to achieve, discovering the leader inside everyone. On this tape, you will learn how this timeless set of human relations principles are just as relevant, if not more so, today as they were when Dale Carnegie first developed them. Each of these principles is basic and easy to understand, but they do require practice and a genuine willingness to learn. Are you ready to manage your relationships with greater ease and success? Would you like to increase the value of your most precious possession, the people in your personal and professional life? Are you willing to find and release the leader in you? If so, listen on. What comes next just might change your life. Finding the leader in you. Fred Wilpon is the president of the New York Mets baseball team. One afternoon, Wilpon was leading a group of school children on a tour of Shea Stadium. He let them stand behind home plate. He took them into the team dugouts. As the final stop on his tour, Wilpon wanted to take the students into the stadium bullpen where the pitchers warm up. But right outside the bullpen gate, the group was stopped by a uniformed security guard. "The bullpen isn't open to the public," the guard told Wilpon, obviously unaware of who he was. "I'm sorry, but you can't go out there." Now, Fred Wilpon certainly had the power to get what he wanted right then and there. He could have berated the poor security guard for failing to recognize such an important person as himself. With a dramatic flourish, Wilpon could have whipped out his top-level security pass and shown the wide-eyed children how much weight he carried at Shea. Wilpon did none of that. He led the students to the far side of the stadium and took them into the bullpen through another gate. Why did he bother to do that? Wilpon didn't want to embarrass the security guard. The man, after all, was doing his job, and doing it well. Later that afternoon, Wilpon even sent off a handwritten note thanking the guard for showing such concern. Had Wilpon chosen instead to yell or cause a scene, the guard might well have ended up feeling resentful, and no doubt his work would have suffered as a result. Wilpin's gentle approach made infinitely more sense. The guard felt great about the compliment, and you can bet he'll recognize Wilpin the next time the two of them happen to meet. Fred Wilpin is a leader, and not just because of the title he holds or the salary he earns. What makes him a leader of men and women is how he has learned to interact. In the past, people in the business world didn't give much thought to the true meaning of leadership. The boss was the boss, and he was in charge, period, end of discussion. The people who had responsibility sat in their offices and managed what they could. That's what they were expected to do, to manage. But mere management simply isn't enough anymore. The world is too unpredictable, too volatile, too fast-moving for such an uninspired approach. What's needed now is leadership. To help people understand what they are capable of, to establish a vision for the future, to encourage, to coach, and to mentor, to establish and maintain successful relationships. Back when business operated in a more stable environment, management skills were sufficient, says Harvard Business School professor John Quelch. But when the business environment becomes volatile, when the waters are uncharted, when your mission requires greater flexibility than you ever imagined it would, that's when leadership skills become critical. Many people still have a narrow understanding of what leadership really is. You say leader, and they think general, president, prime minister, or chairman of the board. Obviously, people in those exalted positions are expected to lead, an expectation they meet with varying levels of success. But the fact of the matter is that leadership does not begin and end at the very top. It is every bit as important, perhaps more important, in the places most of us live and work. The team facilitator, the middle manager, the account executive, the person who works in the mailroom, just about anyone who ever comes in contact with others, has good reason to learn how to lead. Business theorists Warren Bennis and Bert Nanas have studied hundreds of successful organizations, large and small, focusing on the ways in which they are led. A leader, the two men write, must first have developed a mental image of a possible and desirable future state of the organization. This image, which we call a vision, may be as vague as a dream or as precise as a goal or a mission statement. The critical point, Bennis and Nanas explain, is that a vision articulates a view of a realistic, credible, attractive future for the organization, a condition that is better in some important ways than what now exists. And as Bill Makahilahila, Vice President for Human Relations at SGS Thompson Microelectronics, put it, you can't manage by directive anymore. It has to be by influence. It takes real people skills. There is no one correct way to lead, and talented leaders come in many personality types. The idea isn't just to identify the most successful leader you can find and then slavishly model yourself after him or her. When the already famous Berlin met Gershwin, a struggling young composer, he was impressed by Gershwin's obvious talents and offered the young man a job as his musical secretary at almost triple what Gershwin was earning writing songs. But don't take the job, Berlin advised. If you do, you may develop into a second-rate Berlin. But if you insist on being yourself, someday you will become a first-rate Gershwin. Fred Ebb is a Tony Award-winning composer whose hit Broadway shows include Cabaret, Kiss of the Spider-Woman, Chicago, and Zorba. Frequently, young songwriters come to Ebb for professional guidance. I always tell them to follow the advice that Irving Berlin had for George Gershwin. Gershwin stuck with Gershwin, and American popular music reached new heights. Don't try to imitate others, Ebb tells his proteges. Never stop being yourself. The leadership techniques that will work best for you are the ones you nurture inside. Often, defining these qualities requires figuring out who you really are and putting that thoughtfully to work. Ask yourself the question in a straightforward way. What personal qualities do I possess that can be turned into the qualities of leadership? For AMR Corporation Chairman Robert L. Crandall, one of those qualities is a keen ability to anticipate change. Crandall piloted American Airlines through an extremely turbulent era in the air travel business. Olympic gymnast Mary Lou Retton got a big boost from her natural enthusiasm. She leapt out of a small town in West Virginia and landed in the hearts of people everywhere. In the case of Hugh Downs, the veteran ABC newsman, one of these leadership qualities was his down-to-earth humility. Downs managed to build a huge career for himself in the highly competitive business of broadcasting and still remain a gentleman. Whatever those qualities are for you, a dogged persistence, a steel-trap mind, a great imagination, a positive attitude, a strong sense of values, let them blossom into leadership. The first step toward success is identifying your own leadership strengths. Starting to communicate. Nothing could be easier than failing to communicate. Condescending, contradicting, berating, demeaning, treating other people as if I am the boss and you just work here. Until recently, that was a widely accepted form of human interaction inside some of the largest and best-known companies in the world. Barking rights were thought to be a natural prerogative of executive position. More and more people in business and elsewhere are beginning to understand how important communication really is. The ability to communicate well is what lights the fire in people. It's what turns great ideas into action. It's what makes all achievement possible. When Lee Iacocca first went to work at the Ford Motor Company, he discovered the importance of being able to communicate effectively. I own a lot of automobile designers and engineers with terrific ideas who had trouble explaining them to other people. It's always a shame when a guy with great talent can't tell the board or a committee what's in his head. Without mastery of that very basic human skill, the ability to talk and listen to others, members of a company, a school, or a family can't thrive for long. There's no secret recipe for how to learn to communicate well, but there are some basic concepts that can be mastered with relative ease. 1. Make communication a top priority. 2. Be open to other people. 3. Create a receptive environment for communication. No matter how busy you find yourself during the workday, you absolutely must make time to communicate. All the brilliant ideas in the world are worthless if you don't share them. Communication can be accomplished in many ways, in meetings, in face-to-face sessions with colleagues, just walking down the hall or stopping at the water cooler, or spending half an hour in the company lunchroom. What's most important is that communicating never stop. At AMR Corporation, Robert Crandall has a big conference room down the hall from his chairman's office. Every Monday, he spends much of his day in there, listening and talking to people from all parts of the company. The benefits are twofold. Crandall gets the input of knowledgeable people, and they get to help create the future vision of American Airlines. That's fundamental to the development of trusting relationships. Communication doesn't have to happen in the big conference rooms. The biggest mistake managers used to make, besides thinking that all wisdom flowed from them, was failing to understand that communication absolutely has to be a two-way street. You have to share your ideas with others and listen to theirs. That's step number two. Be open to other people, above, below, and beside. David Luther, corporate director of quality at Corning, describes this process at his organization. I use the term bottom trawling, going to the bottom of the organization and asking, what's really going on? What are people worried about? What are they saying? What are they up against? What can you do to help? Publilius Cyrus, the great Roman poet, recognized this fact of human nature 2,000 years ago. We are interested in others when they are interested in us, Cyrus wrote. If you can show your colleagues you are receptive to their ideas, they're more likely to be receptive to yours and to keep you honestly informed about the things you need to know. Show that you care about the future of the organization and that you care as much about them. That's where rule number three comes into play. Create a receptive environment for communication. It's a basic fact about communicating with people. They won't say what they think and won't listen receptively to what you say unless a foundation of genuine trust and shared interest has been laid. This can't be insincere. How you really feel about communication, whether you're open or not, comes through loud and clear, no matter what you say. You know right away if somebody is approachable or if they're not, says Olympic gymnast Mary Lou Retton. When you get that feeling, you can read a person by nonverbal communication and body language. You know when somebody is standing in the corner and saying, "Hey, I don't want to be talked to." How can you avoid sending that message? Be open. Like people and let them know it. Follow Retton's advice. Being down to earth and being humble is something that's extremely important. I just try to put people at ease. Everybody's the same. I think everybody is on a certain level, whether you are the CEO of a company or a salesperson. It's just a different job. That's what creating a receptive environment is all about, putting people at ease. One last thing to remember. Once people do take the risk of telling you what they think, don't punish them for their openness. Do nothing, absolutely nothing, to discourage them from taking the risk of communicating again. Communication sometimes involves showing personal vulnerability by putting your ideas on the line. You're sharing with others and asking them to share with you. That's not always easy. It takes work and time. Techniques have to be acquired and practiced constantly. But take heart. Practice does make perfect, or very nearly so. Communication is built on trusting relationships. Motivating people. There is only one way under heaven to get anybody to do anything, Dale Carnegie said, and that is by making the other person want to do it. The chairman of Reebok International Limited, Paul Fireman, needed a highly motivated workforce. He made a promise that was unusually bold. In 2 years' time, Fireman vowed, Reebok would overtake Nike in market share. But Fireman didn't bribe or threaten or cajole the people who worked for him. He led them to motivation. He showed the employees he was willing to take risks, encouraging them to do the same. He built an innovative product development program and funded it generously. He vowed to spend whatever it took, whatever, to hire the world's top sports figures as Reebok spokesman. Fireman talked and lived a new Reebok vision 24 hours a day. You need to build an enrollment, he explains. I don't think you can dictate that to people. I don't think you can tell people, go, march, do this. What you need to do is to take the time to enroll people in your thinking, your vision, your dream, your fantasy, whatever it is you're doing. Enroll them. It takes time. It takes effort. It takes continual reinforcement. If you enroll one person, then you have a metamorphosis. You change someone, and they become able to enroll 10 people. They become able to enroll 100 people. People think that my goal was outrageous, but after the second, third, fifth, 10th, 20th, and 30th days, they see it's not a statement. It's a way of life. Sure, everyone wants a paycheck, an end-of-the-year bonus, a stock plan, and a great benefits package, too. But real motivation will never flow from financial inducements alone, or for that matter, from a fear of being fired. Give someone a real sense of purpose, the feeling that he or she is working for a valuable, mutually important goal. That's where true motivation comes from. Motivation not just to go through the motions of working. Motivation to excel. Martin Edelston, president of Boardroom Reports, runs his business newsletter publishing company in a consensus way, by constantly seeking suggestions from his 65 employees. You notice when you walk around, Edelston says, none of us here is a rocket scientist. These are all very ordinary people. So how did these ordinary people produce such extraordinary results? I asked everybody for two ideas to make our meetings more interesting, Edelston explains. Now we've had thousands of ideas from these people on every subject imaginable. The whole workforce is driven by suggestions, a modification of the Japanese Kaizen system for continuous improvement. If I asked you for two ways in which I can be better, you'd be complimented, Edelston said. You would tell me how I could make this better. You'd feel really good if I implemented it. I go back next week, ask for two more, and then two more, so that something is happening. I've taken 65 people and made giants out of them. So we have a company now that's doing over $1 million worth of business per person. So recognize people. Include them. Encourage them. Train them. Ask their opinions. Praise them. Let them make decisions. Share the glory with them. Seek their advice and make them understand how valued they are. Encourage them to take risks. Give them the freedom to work as they see fit. And convey your belief in their abilities by getting out of the way. What do people really want? Not many things, Carnegie said. Health and the preservation of life. Food, sleep, money and the things money will buy. Life in the hereafter. Sexual gratification, the well-being of our children, and a feeling of importance. Almost all these wants are usually gratified, all except one. There is one longing, almost as deep, as imperious as the desire for food or sleep. It is what Freud calls the desire to be great. It is what Dewey calls the desire to be important. How can you make people feel important? Include people in all parts of the process. Teamwork is key. Treat people like individuals and acknowledge a job well done. If you treat people as if they are capable and smart and get out of the way, that's exactly how they'll perform. However you do it, let the people in your life know that you respect them, that you appreciate their work, that they are important to you, and that you want them to learn, grow, and reach their potential. Motivation, that's called. Motivation can never be forced. People have to want to do a good job. Expressing genuine interest in others. This is something Dale Carnegie understood. He said, "If you want others to like you, if you want to develop real friendships, if you want to help others at the same time as you help yourself, keep this principle in mind. Become genuinely interested in other people." Lynn Povich, editor-in-chief of Working Woman magazine, understands this well. "You have to take people seriously," she explains. "You can't be remote. You have to touch base with them on a regular basis." After 25 years at Newsweek, she was named their first woman senior editor. It was an interesting turn of events. Most of her colleagues reacted quite well to the promotion, all except one of the six section editors who now reported to her. Povich recalls, "He was against the idea from the very beginning because he felt I had gotten the job only because I am a woman and didn't have the credentials for it." Povich tried not to let this bother her. She immersed herself in the new job. She helped develop story ideas. She spent time talking to the writers. She expressed a sincere interest in each of the sections she was responsible for. Then one day, about 6 months after Povich's appointment, her big critic walked into her office and sat in a chair across from her desk. "I have to tell you something," he said to her. "I was totally against this move. I thought you were too young. I thought you didn't have the experience. I thought you got the promotion only because you were a woman. But I want to say I really appreciate the interest you've shown in the work, in the writers and in the section editors. I've had four guys who were senior editors before you. It was clear to me they were all using this as a stepping stone for the next position. None of them genuinely cared. It's absolutely clear that you really are interested, and you show that interest to everyone." Expressing genuine interest in others. There's no better way to make people interested in you. people respond to people who are sincerely interested in them. This is one of the most basic facts of human psychology. We are flattered by other people's attention. It makes us feel important. We tend to reciprocate their interest by showing interest in them. Most successful people have learned over the years that making others feel important is seldom accomplished by a single or even a few grand gestures. It's a process made up of many little touches. Returning a phone call, remembering a name, treating someone respectfully, those are just about the most important things any leader can do. These basics are what separates one from the crowd by doing these basic things and never stopping. The world today is not just an old boys' club. It's a vastly more integrated, more diverse place than it was even a generation ago. Nowhere is that diversity more apparent than in the business world. Women, homosexuals, people with disabilities, people from a wide array of racial and ethnic backgrounds, they're all a part of the equation today. To succeed in this changed environment, it is absolutely essential to get along comfortably with everyone, whatever their background or culture may be. Only 15 or 20% of the people entering the workforce in the 21st century are not going to be minorities, women, or immigrants, predicts James Houghton, chairman of Corning. So unless you want to avail yourself of only 15% of the talent out there, you'd better get diverse real quick. All of us, at whatever position, will go further and accomplish more by respecting the importance and dignity of others, whatever their position, background, or relationship to us. This is not a new concept. Years ago, Dale Carnegie was applying it to people all over the world. "Do you feel that you are superior to the Japanese?" Carnegie asked. "The truth is that the Japanese consider themselves far superior to you." "Do you consider yourself superior to the Hindus in India?" "That is your privilege." "But a million Hindus feel infinitely superior to you." Each nation feels superior to other nations. That breeds patriotism and wars. The unvarnished truth is almost all people you meet feel superior to you in some way, and a sure way to their hearts is let them realize in some subtle way that you recognize their importance in the world and recognize it sincerely. Truly respecting others is the bedrock of motivation. Listening to learn. The secret of influencing people lies not so much in being a good talker as in being a good listener, Dale Carnegie wrote. Successful leaders, more often than not, are the ones who have learned the value of listening. There are two very good reasons to listen to other people. One, you learn things that way. Two, people respond to those who listen to them. This seems so obvious it sounds almost silly, but it's a lesson that most of us spend most of our lives forgetting to apply. Hugh Downs was lucky. The longtime host of ABC's 2020 program found out about listening early in his broadcasting career. He was interviewing a man who had escaped from a Kremlin prison in the 30s, Downs recalled. This guest was telling him how, for months, the prisoners had been trying to tunnel their way out of there. They'd dug and dug. They'd eaten the dirt. When they figured their tunnel was outside the prison walls, they began digging upwards. It was quite a dramatic story. Then one midnight, they had finally sawed through a wooden platform above their heads, right into the middle of Joseph Stalin's office. And do you know what this interviewer said next? "Do you have any hobbies?" "That's a true story," Downs said. "And I've heard other interviews like that where the interviewer just didn't listen." The importance of listening doesn't apply just to professional interviewers, of course. It is vital for anyone, anywhere, anytime who hopes to communicate with others. Listening is the single most important of all the communication skills, more important than stirring oratory, more important than a powerful voice, more important than the ability to speak multiple languages, more important even than a flair for the written word. Good listening is truly where effective communication begins. It's surprising how few people really listen well, but successful leaders, more often than not, are the ones who have learned the value of listening. Even a great communicator like Richard C. Buteau, director of quality at Motorola, who is expected to articulate and communicate the Motorola vision just about everywhere he goes, must also know when not to talk. In his words, you have to be able to turn off your transmitter and listen. Put the receiver on. Let other people articulate ideas and nurture them. I don't sit on top of a mountain and get these visions of what we ought to do, says Buteau. I have to find out from other people. I have to do a lot of listening. He compares himself to a carrier pigeon. What I do is take the good ideas that I hear and carry them from place to place. The underlying truth here is self-evident. No one can possibly know everything. Listening to others is the single best way to learn. This means listening to employees, to customers, and to your friends and family, even to what harshest critics have to say. It doesn't mean becoming a captive of other people's opinions, but it does mean hearing them out. You'll be thankful for many of their ideas. It took an angry complaint letter to remind Corning's David Luther that his idea of great isn't necessarily the customer's idea of great. Corning had sent around a comprehensive customer survey, and this one respondent did not mince words. Corning stinks, he wrote. As any good executive would, Luther followed up on the complaint and invited the man in for a chat. Well, why does Corning stink? Luther asked the man, who worked in a warehouse that was stocked with Corning products. It's your labels. Luther brightened up. Ah, I got you. You've got to be confusing us with somebody else. Our labels are printed by computer. They show the source of manufacturing, the country of origin, your code, our code, the date, everything you want to know. The man shook his head slowly. Son, have you ever been in a warehouse? Well, yeah, I spent 10 years in a warehouse, as a matter of fact. Have you ever been to my warehouse? Luther admitted he hadn't. Come with me. The warehouse man directed his attention to one of the top shelves. We put Corning stuff up there, but can you read the labels up there? No, Luther had to admit. I can't. Luther learned a valuable lesson that day. You've got to get inside the customer's organization, he said. Think about the person in the warehouse. He's got requirements. She's got requirements. And you won't find out about them unless you bother to ask. If you want to have more successful relationships with your customers, your family, and your friends, look at things from the other person's perspective. Most people try to win others to their way of thinking do too much talking themselves, said Carnegie. Let the other person talk themselves out. They know more about their business or problems than you do. So listen patiently and with an open mind. Be sincere about it. Encourage them to express their ideas fully. Most people think of listening as passive, talking as active. Even the clichés people use in conversation, sit back and listen, hint at this pervasive misunderstanding of what true listening is about. The fact of the matter is that simply hearing what someone says is a relatively passive activity, but engaged, effective listening is a highly active sport. Active listening requires an intense involvement in a conversation, even when the listener's lips are still, and that isn't always easy. It takes concentration. It requires genuine engagement. It calls for questioning and prodding, and it demands some kind of response, quick, thoughtful, on target, and concise. The simple truth of the matter is that people love being listened to. It's true in the business world. It's true at home. It's true of just about everyone we come across in life. They will never forget, and you will learn a thing or two. Nobody is more persuasive than a good listener. Teaming up for tomorrow. It used to be that big organizations were shaped like pyramids. They had many workers on the bottom, and layer after layer of supervisors and middle managers above. Each layer had more authority than the one below it. And this multi-layered structure rose ever so neatly to a perfect, predictable point, where the CEO, the chairman, and the board of directors got to sit. Was this the best way to organize a company, a hospital, a school? Almost no one ever bothered to ask. The old pyramid was as it always had been, solid, impressive, and seemingly impervious to change, until now. Clearly, what's been needed is a structure that loosens up the old rigidity, that could let people do their creative best, that could fully develop the talent that's been laying dormant for years. In more and more well-led organizations, the answer is now found in teams. The president of Chile's Sonda SA, Andres Navarro, says, "The Lone Ranger is no longer possible. A guy by himself inventing something alone, the world is too complicated for that. You need several people from different disciplines working together at the same time." Increasingly often, people are being asked to work beyond their discipline, outside their cultures, above and below their usual ranks. In pyramid companies, the engineers spent all day cooped up with the other engineers. Now, an engineer might just as easily be thrown into a group of salespeople and told, "Help make this product more attractive to the customer." Or, "Figure out how to build that part faster." Or, "Use your engineering expertise to guide this marketing group around a technical glitch." As a result of groupings like this, marketing is actually listening to engineering, and engineering is listening back. Look at how Mary Kay Cosmetics is organized. "The Mary Kay organizational structure is a free form," said Vice Chairman Richard Bartlett. "I like to think of it almost as a molecular structure, where people can go right through any artificial barriers. They are not confined to live in a box. They can participate on a creative action team right across departmental lines. And the customer is smack on top. Effective teamwork doesn't happen by magic. It takes a cooperative group of players, and it takes a talented coach. You can't simply throw a few individuals together, even a few highly talented individuals, and expect them to perform brilliantly. Anyone who expects to be a leader in the years to come had better master a few basic coaching techniques. They are as necessary in the business world as they are on the basketball court. First, create a shared sense of purpose. People working together can accomplish tremendous things. What gives a team that special boost is the unified vision the individual members share. The ideas, the creativity, the intelligent sparks will ultimately have to come from the group itself. But a strong leader is often needed to focus all that energy, to clarify the vision, to establish goals, to help everyone understand what the team is about, to show the team members how their accomplishments will impact on the outside world. Second, make the goals team goals. Unless the whole team wins, no one wins. This concept is most familiar in the world of sports, but it's just as true for teams of any sort. Individual records are fine for the history books, but really, they're an afterthought. What matters far more is the performance of the entire team. That's why most good coaches, and most good leaders, speak so often in the first person plural. We need, our deadline, the job before us. And good leaders always emphasize how everyone's contributions fit in. Third, treat people like the individuals they are. When individuals come together as a team, their individuality doesn't suddenly evaporate. They still have different personalities. They still have different skills. They still have different hopes and fears. A talented leader will recognize those differences, appreciate them, and use them to the advantage of the team.